Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. For fabulous ideas and great savings, the winter sale is not to be missed. Now on, in-store or at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is our text number. Yesterday we mentioned the presidential election. Indeed, our listeners did, and who they'd like to see on the nomination paper, even though it's extraordinarily hard for a non-politician to get onto the nomination paper, because that's the way it's been constructed to keep the independents out, so to speak. But anyway, the name, but we got names, we got one mostly independent and a seat today. Daniel O'Donnell, JP McManus, Michael McDowell's name coming up again and again and again. Well, he's a senator and a former tarnisher and a former Minister for Justice and former leader of the PDs, Joe Brodie, John Kelly, Jarlath Burns, Ray McGuinness, you heard yesterday. I'm just repeating the names from yesterday now. Tom Clonan, Eamon Ryan, Anna Nolan. You heard that very feisty declaration from her mother about her about Anna. It was brilliant, actually. Eileen was brilliant herself. And the list goes on. But so far, the name that's coming up most for us, not scientific, is Michael, Senator Michael McDowell. And maybe whoever gets into the Oris on November the 11th of this year will put the skids under the doll to do a bit more and meet a bit more, because as I said earlier, since the 1st of January last year, 2024, and the 22nd of January this year, which is when the doll comes back, the doll will have sat for 114 days of the 387 days available. 114 days, which is 29.46 of the available days. Now, start ruling out, obviously, Saturday and Sunday. There'd never be anything as urgent to have them sit on a Saturday or even a Friday, is there? Seldom. Or a Monday, either. They all get upset about this. But one of the reasons is that the three callers I'm looking at on the screen now are all ringing about the same thing, that the government and the Minister for Health at the time, Stephen Donnelly, and in fairness to him and the government, they did a lot on the menopause and HRT since 3 years ago, when the wonderful Deirdre Lundy took to the airwaves and shook everyone, Dr. Deirdre, shook everyone into action. And Stephen Donnelly is no longer a TD, which is unfortunate and surprised a lot of people, but he still is Minister for Health, because we've no government. We have a government. It's the existing government. But the negotiations for a new government, there's no hurry, by the way. They're not meeting again, apparently, till next week, to form a government, believe it or not. And in the meantime, one of the undertakings, I would say a promise, but promise isn't strong enough, because a promise is something they make in the manifesto, which are all in all the manifestos, free HRT for all women. Obviously, medical card are already covered, but free HRT from January. January is well underway at this stage, and no sign, not just no sign. The Irish Pharmaceutical Union said, we haven't even had a meeting about it. Niamh Kelly, Chrissy, Bernie, Niamh, you begin. How many pharmacies have you been to, Niamh?
Hiya, Joe. Yeah, I went to three pharmacies and I was told by all three that there's not even an IT system to claim back the HRT. And even if there was an IT system, the HRT that's coming into the country now isn't coded. So they couldn't even claim back because they don't have codes on the actual products.
Okay, and let's be clear. Let's be clear, because they'll be on in their droves. Even though, but I was looking at the Oireachtas website. According to the Oireachtas website today, the Dáil is reconvening on December the 18th, 2024. They haven't even bothered to update the website. And as you know, December the 18th was the day for the new TDs. And as Miriam Lord said, there was no business conducted. As Miriam Lord said, they convened at 10:30 and the Dáil bar was heaving at noon. But anyway, this is what they promised. This is what they said. The government said the cost of HRT products dispensed for private patients will be reimbursable to the pharmacist that dispenses it. Therefore, women will not be charged for the cost of the product. However, the pharmacist may apply a dispensing fee for supplying the HRT, which is for individual pharmacies. And this will be operational in January 2025. Where are we now, Niamh? We're in January 2025.
Yeah.
And your pharmacy said we know nothing.
No, they didn't know. Even like the girls on the desk, on the tills, they seemed to think it was happening. But it was just the pharmacist. And I went to three because I just wanted to triple check. And they said, no, it's not happening. They've heard nothing. There's nothing in place. And we'll be paying for the foreseeable future. Because as I said there, the actual product that we're getting, like I haven't had my actual prescription for Estradot since, I'd say 6 months. Okay. Because there's a shortage.
Yeah.
And it comes in from, I think, Spain. And I think
that's been addressed, apparently, but anyway.
Yeah, no, it's still coming in. And there's no codes on those, so they couldn't even claim them back from the government anyway.
Okay. Now, to be fair, they didn't say, they say that it doesn't apply to your GP visit to get the prescription. But they did state quite clearly it will cover the cost of HRT products. Mm. How much are you spending a month?
Well, I went in before Christmas to get two products. And I spent, it was the dearest this time, it was €46 for two products with HRT. Yeah.
Okay.
I've paid like about between 36 and 46, depending on what country it's coming in from, be it Spain or the Netherlands or different places, it seems to be a bit dearer. So it can go from 36 to 46.
Okay. And there are generics available. But anyway, the promise was, it was more than a promise. The proposal was, and they said they've set 20 million aside. Nothing's been done. But then, now I know the civil servants keep working when the Dáil isn't sitting. But it hasn't even been raised in the Dáil. But how could you raise in the Dáil? The Dáil never sits. Chrissy, good afternoon.
Hello, Chrissy. Joe. How are you?
How are you, Joe? Good, thanks. And a happy new year to you and to all our listeners again. And Chrissy, what's your experience in this new scheme, in the budget, in the manifesto? The cost of HRT products for private patients will be reimbursable from January.
Yeah. I mean, great progress. Delighted to hear it when it was announced.
Remember, and fairness to them, they've done a lot since the government discovered the menopause 3 years ago, that it actually existed.
Yes, and thanks to the likes of yourself and many others, Joe. But, when it came out first in October, I was delighted and I was in my pharmacy and I asked, and obviously they didn't know at that stage. I called back in December again and said, you know, what's the story? They didn't know at that stage. They had nothing on it. And then a red flag kind of came up to me and said, oh, well, it mightn't be free. I said, what do you mean? Well, there could be a dispensing fee. I said, well, that's not the case for the contraceptive, for free contraception that was recently brought in.
Not a good
move.
I went in again.
Yeah, I went in again in January and absolutely no information about it, nothing. So obviously you plough ahead. But look, people need to know really. And it's a promise that was made. And no progress. I did send an email as well.
Chrissy, okay, tell us about the email.
Yeah, no, I just sent an email to a pharmacy as well, just to kind of get it in writing. And again, they said that they have, unfortunately, the Department of Education have not provided pharmacists with any information yet. I understand an expert advisory group has been set up. Big question, what's the delay, you know?
And we did ask for the minister. And he's entitled. If he's on holiday, he's on holiday. But we were told he wasn't available. They wouldn't tell us anything else.
Yeah.
Or any spokesperson wasn't available, or there wasn't a statement available. Or anyway, that's where we are. And Chrissy, do you want to tell us how much you
Well, same.
We're around 50. Now, the National Women's Council, where are they?
Well, I mean, they were delighted and hailed it in,
I saw it on their
website. So all I can say about them was I did send them an email. Now, it was only a few days ago over the new year and asked them, had they any information on it? So I would love to hear from the National Women's Council, you know.
You also emailed Lloyds, which is one of the biggest pharmacy groups, and very reputable.
Yes.
They say, we're awaiting instructions.
That's right.
I hope they're not holding their breath. Await instructions, because they'll have to get onto the oxygen machine in the back behind the counter. And you say you heard a woman went to Spain, and we know a lot of Irish people go to Spain. €6 in Spain. €6.
Yeah, well, I read it somewhere, along the line. I can't even remember where now, but there was a lady and she had forgotten her prescription and she went in and they gave it to her over the counter and it was €6.20 or something like that.
Stay there, Chrissy. Joe at RT.ie. By the way, we also put in up-to-date questions to the department today and they haven't come back to us on those questions either. Bernie, good afternoon, Bernie.
Hi. Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks. You actually went with your prescription to the pharmacy in the mistake belief that Stephen Donnelly had made a New Year's resolution to stick to the promise and the commitment. It wasn't a promise. It was a commitment. It was a statement that HRT product from January would be available to women free. The dispensing could be slightly different or whatever. What happened to you, Bernie?
Well, it was actually my daughter. I'm sick at the moment. Okay. My daughter went in to collect the prescription, and I told her that it was free. And there was a bit of confusion behind the counter. The girl said, "No, it's not actually free." And she said, "No, my mom said it is free from January." Yeah. And she was ringing me at the same time to explain what was going on at the counter. And they said they had to speak to the pharmacist. And the pharmacist came out and said, "No, actually, we haven't heard from the Department of Health. It's not free. You have to actually pay for it." So I just said to my daughter, okay, I didn't need it straight away yesterday. I said, come away. And I said, I'll look into this myself. I contacted my GP this morning and the girls again in the GP office were lovely. They hadn't heard that there was an issue, but they were going to make investigations and come back to me. And then separately to that, I rang the Department of Health and spoke to a lovely, helpful guy there. And he said that I'm not the first to be on to them today. And what he recommended was that I contact them by email. And that's what I did. And he said that once an email is submitted to the department, that someone would read it and get back to me. And that's where I'm at the moment. And I knew you were delighted to hear the news for women of Ireland to get the free HRT in October. And I just thought you might be interested to hear that actually it might not be happening, which seems to be the case. And that's where I'm at right now.
And the email is customer services, because they have such
customer services at health.gov.ie.
Yeah. And, and they said we will check.
They would check and come back to me, and I haven't heard from them. In fairness, I only emailed them in the last couple of hours. But I have a good number of networking females who are in similar situation as myself.
Okay.
And they're all emailing that department as well, because we just feel, hard done by. And we were looking forward to our free HRT in January.
Yeah. And we often hear the Institute of Pharma Economics on going on about how difficult it is to pay for different drugs for people with cystic fibrosis and spina bifida. But, like, are they shopping around to try and find out who's supplying HRT in Spain for €6? That'd be a good thing to do, wouldn't it? Try and find out where we can get it. Because most women, as far as I can see from the screen here, are paying 50 a month, around 50 a month.
Yeah.
Which is £600 a year.
Yeah.
Which is, and if you're out working, that's, you have to wear nearly £1,200 to bring £600 home in your pocket after everything.
Yeah.
Let's don't have a government spokesperson. We do have a government somewhere, but we don't have a government spokesperson. And as I say, there doesn't seem to be any urgency in forming a new government. And so the person who's Minister for Health is no longer a TD. Now, that doesn't dilute his power. I'm sure it doesn't dilute his enthusiasm for the job. But the person who's Minister for Health is no longer answerable to the Dáil, which doesn't make any difference because the Dáil doesn't sit for two-thirds of the year, effectively. But they would argue we've come along leaps and bounds in the past 3 years in terms of the menopause and the wonderful menopause clinics that have been set up, the discussion about the menopause, the leaflets about the menopause, the recognition of the menopause, including by a lot of GPs, and above all, the recognition of the importance of HRT in the past 3 years. So what about that? We're doing a lot. Give us time. They could also say, I don't know, we've asked them. They could also say we've been up to our eyes with the flu epidemic at the minute. So is there any excuse, Bernie, that you would accept?
No, not really.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
I'm not happy with mm-hmm. how it's panned out, you know, in the last day or two, finding out this way, you know. They've had, if it was in the pipeline before October 2024, before he announced it, they have enough time to put legislation in place. And what was said to me by the guy again in the Department of Health was the legislation has to pass, and because of the change of government, it may not pass. So I think it may not pass. That's my feeling on it. But that's why we're on talking to you, Joe.
Yeah, but there are things that can be done. Like, a government is pretty powerful.
Yeah, I know.
It's pretty powerful. There are things that can be done. Like, by the way, if call the Dáil back next Tuesday for an hour, and they have a majority. Call them, push it through. Mm-hmm. What's the big deal? It's not coming back now till the end of January. They came back one day since the beginning of November. That was December the 18th for a party, basically, with the Healy Rays providing the entertainment with the music and that. Why didn't they say that morning, hang on, we need... There was no business conducted that day, by the way, except in the Dáil Bar. Why didn't they say that morning, hang on, lads, we need to get through this piece of legislation that will... I don't believe everything is hanging on this piece of legislation, by the way. But even if it was, why didn't they say on that December the 18th, 2 minutes, vote, yeah, hardly anyone disagrees, I presume. Nobody. Mm. But it didn't happen. Bernie, I don't know, has anyone seen any... I know they're working. I know they deserve a break. I know families, as everyone does, deserves a break. But most people in the country are good, hard-working people. And I especially think, as I go on about every week, about the people who are rushing to the creche, the couple with the two young children to the creche every morning at 20 past seven. They need a car because they're two babies in baby seats. Then they're getting into the lunatic traffic. Then they're anyway. They work hard. I can tell you, young couples work hard, and they a lot of them are the pin in their collar. The other thing I felt, who sent their daughter, Bernie, Chrissy, was you, was it?
Who's
no,
that was Bernie.
Bernie, okay, Bernie. I also feel it's a little bit embarrassing having to go into a shop and say, well, I read in the paper or whatever, I heard on the number of times Stephen Donnelly was on before the election, non-stop. I heard him say it's free, and you didn't, and you don't, that's not your way. But you almost have to contradict the pharmacist and say, we were told it's free.
Yeah, no, my daughter was uncomfortable, to be honest. I'm not well, so she was doing me a favour by collecting the script for me, and it's an automatic, it's sent from my GP to the pharmacy, so it's an automatic renewal every month, and I explained to her that it was free. I hadn't made a phone call in advance, so I realised what was happening for her, and I just said, she was actually buying me some more Actifed at the same time, and I said, just get the medicine that I need now. I said, come away, and I'll log a call in the morning, and that's what I did today, and then contacted you as well. So it was embarrassing for her, you know. I didn't want to put her in that position, you know.
And Bernie, are you up to yourself? Do you want to tell me, are you badly under the weather, as they say, or?
I'm working as well, so it's a bad cold. Us women, we fight on, you know.
I know that. You're going to have to keep fighting on this every inch of it. The Irish Pharmacy Union.
Yeah.
And they had a rep on with Colm Amunga on this morning. The Irish Farmers Union say, this is their statement, there's been absolutely no operational or implementation details agreed. There hasn't even been discussion as to how the scheme would actually work. This is a scheme that was coming in January. So nothing has been put in place. Secondary legislation to support a bill in November is required. But the piece of legislation hasn't even been written yet.
Joe?
The union, so just, I'll let you back in. The union wrote to the department four times since last October to raise its concerns. When they do come and talk to us, so obviously they did get a meeting out of the emails. When they do come and talk to us, there will be a significant lead in time required in terms of how the new IT system works. And as it was saying at Bernie, I think the HRT that's there at the minute, you can't even log it because it doesn't have the required data on it that you could. The pharmacist might say, well, I'll if the government turned around and said, we're saying to pharmacists today, you can give out this product, whatever, hey, pick a name or pick a generic, you can give out this product on prescription to women, they don't have to pay for the product, and we guarantee as a government, like we guaranteed banks for 64 billion, we guarantee that we will pay, and I'd say a lot of pharmacists would go along with that, but that hasn't even happened. There's not a whimper, not a whimper out of them. Who wanted to come in there? Sorry, was it Niamh?
Sorry, yeah, it was. But if they could even have afforded us the respect to let us know that this wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, like, we all went along in December, I just went before Christmas, and fully thought it was happening. And they didn't even warn us. I just feel there we are again, women were just left second-class citizens. Nobody told us. Yeah. This wasn't happening.
Yeah.
January is a dear month as well.
Yeah,
we've just finished Christmas. Nobody's any money. And then you have to fork out €46. I think just the lack of warning that this wasn't going to happen. You know, because I have a lot of friends on it and we would have been talking in work about, you know, January's coming, we're going to be getting this for free. And none of them, like I text them all when I heard, and none of them knew. So we were just left again.
Yeah, not a word.
High and dry.
And I heard that, you know, on Friday they have these discussions at the end of the morning talk shows, you know, the roundup of the week. And it just wasn't, I listened to two of them, two different programs. I monitored different programs. And this wasn't, you know, the only thing in the discussions were, and this is no fault of the participants, it was politicians. Who is going to get the jobs? Who's going to get the Mercs and the Perks? Is Fianna Fáil going to get justice? Is Dara going to stay in housing? And nobody, well, again, the Dáil isn't sitting, so it is. So this won't be brought up in the Dáil. Because it can't be, unless you want to stand outside. But then again, if December the 18th was anything to go by and no one remarked on this, the Dáil was effectively, and all the streets around it, were no-go areas for the public. From the top of Kildare Street, the bottom of Kildare Street, the middle of Molesworth Street, the public could not get next to the Dáil. That's neither here nor there. Even if you had a placard saying, where's our free HRT, you'd want a loud hailer. For them to be able to hear you, we're kept so far back now from our national parliament. Anyway, Niamh Kelly, Chrissy, Bernie, I hope you recover quickly. And again, anyone with I know you don't have the flu, but anyone under the weather with the flu, it's an awful dose by all accounts. And do please get the vaccination if you haven't already. Niamh Kelly, Chrissy and Bernie, thank you, the three of you, for independently contacting us and keeping us up to date on that. And hopefully, if there's anyone listening, hopefully there'll be some action ASAP. Joe at RT.ie. 51551 is the text number.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
I was going on yesterday about the importance of radio and the fact that this station in 12 months' time will be hopefully celebrating the 100 years, the centenary of RTE. It's not television, there's more than television in this place. But it's a centenary and the importance of radio, and that brought up the whole issue of the shipping forecast, because the shipping forecast on the BBC, which goes out three times a day, most people, if they hear it, mariners live by it, even in the technological age we live in. It's at 48 minutes past midnight, but that's been going non-stop, apart from a couple of days in the Second World War, obviously. That's been going non-stop for 100 years. Now, Marion Cox contacted us. Marion, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Tell us. Good, thanks. Tell us the shipping forecast, and RTE Radio do it, obviously not for as long. You say it helped your husband sail across the Atlantic.
Yeah, it was really amazing listening to that interview yesterday, and particularly that lady. What a marvellous voice she had.
Mairéad Devlin,
Mairéad Devlin. It rang a bell. John had set sail from the US in a boat that we did build ourselves in the back garden. And he did it with a very close friend, Aidan Berry from Galway, who'd never sailed. And also a guy who had, Willie Alvey, who was a skipper. That was my only stipulation. You better bring someone who really has done this before. Cut a long story short, their equipment failed very quickly. The autopilot, the radio, and the radio is so important, as you know. And he had the foresight to have a satellite phone. So he would call me every day no, how are you, darling? It was like, here's our coordinates, latitude, longitude. And I would call Met Aaron. And there was a man there, I think his name was Gerard Fleming.
Oh, Jerry Fleming, yes, the great Jerry Fleming, yes.
Is he retired? Is he still there?
Yes, he lives down in Wexford.
Agaway,
no,
he's okay.
I don't know if he's doing Dancing with the Stars, the rest of them are, but I don't think he is.
Okay, well, thank God he
was. It's only a matter of time. Anyway, Gerard with the wink. Gerard had the wink, didn't he? The wink.
Well, I
remember.
Don't know, because I only talked to him on the phone in those days. Jeez.
Okay, well, tell us your story, Marion. I'm rambling.
I would give him the coordinates, and he would go off and come back with a personal forecast for where they were in the middle of the Atlantic. And, I mean, I just couldn't be so grateful, except one day he came back to me and he said, Marion, the weather is really, really bad. And gale force winds, it was hurricane season. Hurricane Katrina was there at the time, if you remember. Terrible, lots of life in the U.S. But he said, it's really bad. And I said, well, how bad is it, Jerry? He said, well, let me put it this way. They're out of range of the helicopters at the RNLI in both the U.K. and Ireland. So needless to say, my stomach turned. So John called me on the satellite phone, which was could only be charged when the engine was running. So that was rarely done. And I gave him the coordinates. And next thing he said, thank you. And he said, say a little prayer for us.
Okay.
And I have to tell you, he wasn't religious. Okay. So I knew there was big troubles coming.
So how were you after he said that to you?
I had to stay cool as a cucumber in the moment because that wouldn't have helped. But I got off the phone. I bolted into the utility room, burst into tears and called my mother. So I burst into the utility room so that the kids wouldn't hear me. But
good luck.
Luckily, they made it safely. They made it safely over. And they had gone back into Halifax, Nova Scotia for shelter during the hurricane. But I cannot just thank Met Aaron enough. I know they often get a bad rap for daily forecast, but the sea forecast is a matter of life and death. Yeah. And I really appreciate what Gerard Fleming and his crew did that time.
Well done. Well said. Aidan Berry. Aidan, you're involved in this as well.
Well, I was on board, Joe, yes.
Yeah, so that's pretty close.
Yes, it is. It is indeed.
To you, yeah. Go on, tell us. What was your
John,
memory?
It was a lifetime dream of John's. He came from Merchants Road in Galway, very near the docks.
Yeah.
And this was a lifetime dream of his. He had worked in London and then went to America, and he had this dream. And he asked my brother Mike, would he accompany him and maybe one or two others. So in the end, Mike opted out. So Aidan, or Aidy as I'm called, opted in. And I flew over and we were getting everything ready to go. Now, it started off, we were about 5 weeks behind schedule. I think we were to go around the 4th of July, but it ended up being about 5 weeks after that or a bit more. So we were... There had been a storm and we were very conscious. We would have entered more into the storm season, not having left on time. So because of this, we were very dependent on weather forecasts and the like, which Marion has mentioned a bit to you.
And a few hours is a long time in a weather forecast.
Thing is, with breakdowns and communication gaps, etc., Joe, we were very dependent. So the intention was indeed to go south and go towards the Azores, hop off at the Azores, have a few drinks, stretch the legs, and resume back to Galway. But I'm afraid in dodging and going down. But the forecast did. We dodged a lot of bad weather. And because of the good forecasts and the thing, and Gerard Fleming and the whole crew there, certainly we are grateful. But eventually we were caught in a storm, and it was John and Willie Alvey, was a Dublin man, was great because he was our skipper. And Willie took us, put on the engine. We still had the engine at that stage, Wakus Ledia, and he managed to ride out the storm with the engine. I, the coward being that I am, went down to my bunk. I was of no use there anyway at that stage, and I was exhausted. Went down to my bunk and went to sleep, thinking I might not be getting up on board again. But fortunately, we did get into Galway and arrived safely, and had it was a tough journey, and I wasn't, as I had dreamed of, being out on deck sunning myself with maybe a fishing line and just roasting in the sun, etc. The journey was quite different than that.
And Aidan, the craft you were on, was that sturdy? I presume it was.
She was sturdy, Joe. I'll tell you, John had it built, and I didn't know anything of these, but he had extra on the hull done. And she weathered the storm there so well that she, kind of a 10-hour storm, she proved herself way and beyond, definitely. We were fortunate. We had a massive big mast on it. John had a massive story about the people he met when he was getting the boat built and buying the mast. The people he met, the yard went bust. The man who was running the yard
left and went
back to New Zealand to become a monk. So the whole thing was all very exciting. But I'll tell you, I've been asked by a number of... it's 20 years now since we did the journey. But one of the nicest feelings I ever had in my life was coming into Galway Bay on the day we arrived with just no engine drifting in.
Wow.
As we hadn't had the engine for quite a time. And looking across over towards the Clare coast and watching a minibus slowly going in towards, along the coast road. And it was picture, no sound. And it was absolutely heavenly and beautiful. I was glad to be alive.
Again. Well done, Aidan. Well said.
So
well
delighted said. To be back on... in my own dear Galway Bay.
Terra firma, terra firma. Marion, did you not give John a boat kit when he was for his 40th birthday?
I did. It was a 15-foot wooden boat. And his dad had been a cabinet maker, or what you call, I guess, a master carpenter. So they were always, fiddling with things.
But that's not the boat. That's not the boat they were in. That's not the craft they were in.
No. This boat, it took us 10 years to build it. He bought the bare hull.
God, who did you get to build it? Bam, the Crowder down the Children's Hospital. 10 years.
It costs a little bit of money, Joe. You have to work in the meantime,
I know.
And it was all done. John was fastidious about things. He was a very passionate person, a bit of a maverick, and therefore not easy to live with. But when he took on something, he did it 110%. So, I'd be going to sleep with reading my Anglo-Irish novels beside the bed, and he'd have books on celestial navigation and physics and mathematics.
And unfortunately, I should tell people, he passed away 4 years ago, unfortunately.
He did. But it was a labour of love. My three older, my stepkids, they were involved in putting lead in the ballast, building out the boat. It took that long. It was a massive boat. And it was a beautiful design. It was called a Cape George Cutter, 45 foot. Okay. And it's now sitting down in Kinsale. It's back on the water with a lovely man, Colin Palfrey, who bought it. Unfortunately, I had to sell it, but that's the way things go. It's where it should be, back in the water, but a very sound boat, an absolute swan on the water. Beautiful.
Oh, lovely phrase. And in memory of John, and also... in appreciation of the shipping forecasts and the people who deliver it to us non-stop every single day. Okay, thanks indeed. Marion Cox and Aidan Berry, good sail. What's it? Safe sailing to both of you. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Okay, the list of people who our listeners would like to see on the ballot paper for the presidential election. Michael, good afternoon. Who would you like?
Joe. Daniel O'Donnell.
Okay, why?
Well, he's a people's man.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
He's a very popular man.
Yeah.
I was listening to your show yesterday, and it said about barristers and lawyers.
Yeah.
You know, but I didn't know that you had to be kind of in the government or to be nominated for something like that, you know?
Well, as we said yesterday, the nomination to get on the ballot paper for the presidential election is extremely tight and limited. You either you need 20 signatures of members of the Houses of the Oireachtas, or you need the nomination of 4 council, city council or county councils. And if those city or county councils nominate you, they cannot nominate anyone else. And the only other way, if you are the incumbent and you haven't done 2 terms, which obviously applies to Uachtaráin, Michael D. Higgins, if you haven't done 2 terms, but if you are the incumbent, after 1 term, you can nominate yourself. So it's very, very tight. But then again, Daniel would have a chance, wouldn't he, in front of county councils?
He should have. You know, he's got... Well, you know, he's really a people's man, you know, and he knows how to handle himself, like, and he would be a very genuine, sincere man.
And he's a great sense of humour.
A great sense of humour.
Yeah.
And no doubt about it.
And extra, and by the way, very intelligent.
Very intelligent.
Very intelligent.
And he would be a man for all Ireland. You know, I'm not saying any of the rest of them wouldn't be.
Of course.
But Daniel would be very, very popular. There wouldn't be a bad bone in his body. He'd be very
By the way, and we get, maybe Magella should stand for president. We get Magella as well. That's incredible. That would be incredible.
Yeah.
By the way, someone said to me yesterday, I know Bono's name cropped up yesterday, but someone said to me, what about Ali Youson, who's an incredible, who happens to be, though she's a figure and an activist, very much so in her own right, she happens to be Bono's wife. But someone said, what about Ali Youson, given her philanthropic and activism over the years? But anyway, Brendan Flood, 51551 for your nomination. Brendan, who would you like to nominate?
An outstanding candidate in my mind, it has to be J.P. McManus.
Okay, why? This is the racehorse owner, the philanthropist.
Exactly, you said it correctly. Yeah, particularly in the philanthropy area, the work he has done for Limerick City and general, and then for the GAA, for the racing fraternity, for the whole racing world of Ireland, the amount of employment he has given through his ownership of horses, his sponsorship and support to racing trainers and all that. He's a fantastic Irishman, and you'd have no trouble about him talking too much. He's pretty reticent, and he won't do a Michael D shooting off from his elbow sort of thing, you know. So I would
now what Brendan.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there is when JP, and he is brilliant on the GAA, there's no doubt about that, and philanthropy and Adair and the Ryder Cup and everything.
Exactly.
But anytime this he gives out these, and I know he gives education scholarships as well, but the reaction you get from some people, and it is a legitimate response, in fairness, is, well, then one of the reasons he has so much money to give away is that he's not tax resident in Ireland.
That's been trotted out ad nauseum. The amount of good outweighs by any way any money that he might have to pay through avoidance. I mean, it's ridiculous. You count in millions the number of people that he's supported in this country. It's unbelievable. And then you'll always have the begrudgers, and you'll always have people who don't like Michael D or somebody. So it's a bit of an advantage to have people giving off about you, because, you know, any publicity is good publicity.
Now, in fairness, like the other people, like Daniel O'Donnell does give interviews and he does participate.
He's a bit of an old woman, for God's sake.
Well, I take that as a compliment. That phrase, don't use that phrase again, please. But to me, it would be a compliment because he's a great, great, great character. But he does participate in public life, public life.
Yeah.
And PJ doesn't give interviews as far as I can see. But anyway, Vincent Murphy, 51551. Who do you want to see in the Oris, Vincent? Thanks, Brendan.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Go ahead, Vincent.
Happy New Year for you too, many, to many, you and your listeners.
And many more than please God, yeah.
I think Sean Kelly, the MEP from Killarney, would make an excellent president, Joe.
Okay, tell us why.
Well, I suppose he wasn't afraid to go up against the somewhat conservative GAA hierarchy in relation to opening up of Croke Park. He's been a safe pair of hands in Europe. He's well-educated. He doesn't rock the boat, but if a decision has to be made, I think he's quite prepared to make it. And that's coming from a Cork man.
Okay.
But and I know Mairead McGuinness, one of your listeners.
Yes, sure, her name has come up as well.
Threw
yeah.
her in there. But and for sure, she is also, I think, and I'm apolitical, but I think Sean is more rounded and he appeals to the masses and he doesn't tend to go out and insult anybody. He's a diplomat, he's a statesman. And for
he did extraordinarily well. Anyway. And he stands for public office as well.
For sure.
And he did. He's extraordinarily popular, isn't he, in the most recent MEP elections. And you say one of the things that would stand to Sean is the fact that he opened up Croke Park to other games.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a brave decision and it wasn't popular with the masses in general, but he was prepared to go out on a limb and it could have cost him his political career thereafter. Yeah. But he made the decision and he stood by it. So for me, for sure, I definitely would see him as an outstanding potential candidate.
Now, Vincent, a critical question I had to, I know this is a very difficult question to answer. So take your time if you wish, or even call a break.
Can I phone a friend, Joe?
Phone a friend. You can phone a friend.
Okay.
Will the Healy Rays support him?
Good question.
Thank you very much.
If there'll be a bit of road work involved, I'm sure they will.
Because they are some operation, you know that.
Yeah,
professional
for sure.
On the ball. Very smart. Yeah. Okay. So have we I saw Sean's name mentioned in dispatches over the weekend. So maybe he is interested. Now he's only just gone back to Europe, but he's been there for I think this is his second or even third term. So he's well used to politics, isn't he?
He is. And he, like, you never hear him getting involved in major upheavals or whatever.
And he would, given that he's a staunch member of Fine Gael, and as I say, the political parties have it sewn up in terms of the nomination, given that he's a staunch member of Fine Gael, the only competition he would face is someone else in Fine Gael, isn't it?
Likely Mairead McGuinness would
be. Yeah, whatever her name is
mentioned,
Frances Fitzgerald, as I mentioned in the newspapers. At the weekend, I saw Roisin Shorthold's name mentioned in an opinion poll last week. But the only opposition Sean would face is within it's in terms of getting the nomination is within Fine Gael, because it's within their gift, and obviously
Absolutely. The
numbers are somewhat reduced. But still, they'd have enough to nominate. No bother whatsoever. And you think he would be interested?
I don't know the gentleman personally, but as I said to you previously, Joe, he certainly would get my vote if he were. And again, I've no allegiance or alliance to Fine Gael, but I was very impressed with the guy, and I wouldn't be a big head either. But I thought it was a very brave decision, and he carries himself well, and he's well got in Europe. He's educated, and I think he would represent the country.
Very,
and that's from a Corkman that always gets defeated by Kerry.
I was going to say that, given that you're a Corkman supporting a Kerry man, are you available to participate in the Irish edition of Traitors?
Possibly. Speak to my agent, Joe.
Because you'd be good at it. You'd be good. Well done. Okay, Vincent, good to meet them all. Good. Vincent nominating or suggesting Sean Kelly, MEP. Fine Gael, Michael suggesting the wonderful Daniel O'Donnell. And there'll be more suggestions later on. Let's go back to this HRT situation. Deirdre Leahy is a pharmacist in Dunleary. Deirdre, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks. Well, you're from your side of the counter, so to speak. What's been happening on the HRT? We were told, again, it wasn't a promise. It wasn't on the stump in the election. It was a statement from the government in the budget from January. HRT product will be available free to women. What have you heard, Deirdre?
Well, we heard the people who were supposed to be giving this in January, the same as everyone else. So it was announced to us the same time as everyone else. And that was really frustrating because from the start, we had people inquiring about it, rightly so, that they wanted to know what was going to happen and what information would we need to give it free. And we knew nothing, absolutely nothing. And as you know, we've been struggling to get stock over the last couple of months. There's been a lot of shortages. We have to dispense a lot of unlicensed medicines. And for our patients, and I know every other pharmacist is the same, you feel awful when someone comes in like that lady you spoke to earlier and she was expecting it to be free.
Yeah.
And we couldn't tell her anything. We couldn't tell her what the scheme would be, what information we'll need to do the scheme, whether we need her PPSN number, her date of birth. So nothing has been set up. So the likelihood is, you know, we've no idea when it's going to happen. And, you know, us pharmacists are on the cold face and people, you know, are coming in to ask us and we have absolutely no information.
Now, I take your point. You're on the cold face and you're embarrassed as well when people come in and say, well, it's free.
People are entitled to it.
But I've fairness, Deirdre, I've never met anyone as more diplomatic as pharmacists and people who work in pharmacies. Yeah. They're absolutely brilliant. They're
but
absolutely
it's not
brilliant.
Fair in them. I know. It's not fair enough. Because, you know, people like that lady who sent her daughter in, you know, in fairness to the young girl coming in, thinking that it was free and... we can't even tell you if it's going to happen next month or the following month. It seems a very bad way to run a government and run a health service or run anything. I mean, it'd be like if someone told you from tomorrow you're going to have a different show. No one told you.
Yeah, well, that's not important in compared to what you do. Yeah,
no,
I take your point. Yeah, but I take...
It's
have
your
you,
job.
Have you got any circular at all, Deirdre? Have you got any...
Nothing. And we've been on to our union, and as the union said, they've been trying to write to the government just so we can get in place. Because if we need information, so if we need to know someone's PPS number, if they need to register in a scheme, if they need, to know the products they'll be allowed, at least we can give them fair warning to say, this is the products that will be allowed, and this is how many will be allowed in a month. So you need to get this on your prescription from your GP. That would be a reasonable way to do it.
And is it fair to say there has been an upsurge, rightly so, since HRT especially became, through medics primarily, the likes of Deirdre Landy, the HRT became much more important in the dispensing of medications to try and cope with the menopause three and a half years ago at this stage.
Absolutely. Yeah, and, you know, we've been having problems for the last few months. So, you know, when products become unavailable, we have to get maybe an unlicensed version of it.
Yeah,
but that mightn't agree with the people. You know, there might be a different excipient in it and it doesn't agree with everyone. So, you know, they come back and say, I didn't actually like that product. Could I go back to the original one? But we can't get it. So some of my patients have ended up on three different formulations of the same medication because we can't get anything else. And that's not really good medicine either.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the way we'd like to do business.
And are you, the flu, we want 2,000 people in the hospital now with the flu, mother of God. What are you encountering in your pharmacy at the minute, Deirdre?
Oh, there's a lot of sickness about at the moment. There's a lot of flu, a lot of flu symptoms and a lot of people are sick with the head cold, you know, and head colds and quite ill. And
that they can't shake, isn't
it? Yes, yeah, and people who are immunocompromised anyway, well, our older people are, as they say, very young people, will be more sick, you know, than other people, you know, people who aren't immunocompromised.
And insofar as you can't be scientific from one shot, but the take-up of the flu jab...
Well, we got good take-up in the flu
great,
jab.
Great.
We're still giving it,
so, oh, you're still giving it, great.
Yeah, we're still giving it,
So it's not too late. So, Colm Henry saying that again and again and again of the HSE. It's not too late. It's not too late.
No, not too late. But we are trying. So just so people know, and women my age out there do know, you know, as soon as we can, you know, we hear legislation that's in place, we'll be ready to go straight away, the pharmacists, you know, will be. But it's so frustrating for us to be dealing with this.
Yeah. Okay, Deirdre, well done. And again, thank you for your service. But as Deirdre Leahy just explained, the pharmacists in Dunleary, they've heard absolutely nothing either from the state about this scheme that was due to start on the 1st of January. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 is the text number.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now, we're taken to the high seas again, so to speak, because this came up just before Christmas. I got a brief mention when we were talking about a book called, it's self-published, a book called The Final Voyage of the Thetis, T-H-E-T-I-S, that was in the early 1800s, and we spoke to Paul O'Dowd, who wrote, but he mentioned another ship, around the same vintage, 1835, called the Francis Spaight. And Dr. Matthew Potter is curator of the Limerick Museum. And he has, this is an incredible story about the Francis Spaight, a ship from 1835. Now, the only thing I would say to you, if you've young ears, I know it's nearly 200 years ago, but if you've young ears, there's one incident in this story with the cabin boy. In other words, when they ran out of food, which people might find a little bit distressing. So I'm giving you fair warning and fair sailing. Dr. Matthew Potter, Doctor, tell us about this ship, the Francis Spaight, and how a young 15-year-old boy named Patrick O'Brien, a cabin boy, was to meet his end. You can start wherever you start as we're leaving and why we're leaving port, Matthew.
Thank you very much, Joe, for having me on. Well, the Francis Spaight was a Limerick merchant ship. It was a three-masted sailing ship, 345 tons. And this, of course, was still the golden age of sail, which continued on to the end of the 19th century, even though steamships were becoming increasingly popular. Mm-hmm. And the Francis Spaight was called after Francis Spaight, who was a Clare-born Limerick merchant who owned a large estate in County Tipperary. And basically, he was involved in the trade between Limerick and Canada, which was then known as British North America. And how it worked was the ships would sail from Limerick to Canada, bringing emigrants from Ireland to Canada, and then they would return then with timber from Canada to Limerick. And of course, at this stage, there was a great demand for timber, mainly for building ships, but also for construction and for furniture making and for many other purposes. And of course, Ireland was pretty denuded of timber by this stage.
Of course, yeah.
So at this stage, of course, it took about 6 to 8 weeks to travel between Canada and Ireland. But earlier in 1835, the Francis Spaight had left Limerick, had gone to Quebec with 216 emigrants. And it then took a while then to return to Ireland. It left St. John's, Newfoundland, on the 24th of November with a cargo of timber for the return journey.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it had a crew of 18, headed by Captain Timothy Gorman, and he and most of the crew, actually, some 14 of them out of the 18, were from Kilrush in County Clare, which was then a major port. And of course, because Spaight himself had been born in Clare, he had a predisposition to employing Clare people. And of the 18 crew, 14 of them were adult sailors, but four of them were apprentices or cabin boys. And they included a boy called Patrick or Pat O'Brien from Limerick City, who was 14. He was a widow's son. And it's thought that the other three boys then would have come from the Limerick workhouse.
Wow.
Now, the journey would normally take 6 to 8 weeks. But unfortunately then, on December 3rd, and of course it's important to remember this is the winter, the ship ran into storms and it capsized. During this particular part of the crisis, three of the crew were drowned, and that, of course, then left 15.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
And then the captain, then Captain Gorman, he was an efficient but a ruthless man, as will emerge later on. He ordered then that the masts of the ship should be cut down, and as a result, then the ship was returned to the right way up. But of course, that wasn't the end of the problem now, because the ship couldn't be steered now anymore, of course, without sails or anything. And the survivors were standing in the water on the deck of the ship, but up to their ankles in water.
Okay.
And of course, what that meant as well then, of course, that they were suffering a lot from cold and from sores formed on their legs.
Oh,
and
horror,
they had no
story.
Food then. Exactly.
Horror story.
So there was no food then or provisions left as a result of the ship capsizing. All that was left was some bottles of wine, which they consumed fairly quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to collect some rainwater then in handkerchiefs and all this kind of thing. So they were able to survive with the... they survived because of the water, but of course they had no food.
Okay.
And then the problem then arose as to how they were going to get food, and there was no sign, of course, of any rescuers at this point. Now, there was, of course, then a notorious custom known as the custom of the sea, which was a feature of the age of sail. And what this really was, the custom was it permitted shipwrecked survivors to kill one of their own number and then eat him so that the others might survive.
Mother of God.
Exactly.
Mother now, of good God. I know it's Lord of the Flies and all that. But anyway, here we go. Okay, so it you're saying that, what was it called, the custom of the sea allowed cannibalism?
It did. It did. No, it didn't happen very often.
Thank God. There'll be none of them left.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But it was actually considered to be a custom that among the practices where, of course, it had to be the chosen person had to be chosen by the drawing of lots.
Ah, okay.
And, this had to be conducted fairly. And as long as the lottery was carried out fairly and everyone had an equal chance of dying and becoming food for the others, it was considered justifiable. And therefore, the custom didn't generally attract any repercussions if and when the survivors were rescued and returned to their home. So in the case of this particular crisis, suggestion was made by the captain, Captain Gorman. This is where he showed his ruthless side. He decided that only the four cabin boys should be eligible to be for this particular lottery. And
So the captain says,
"Yeah,
the law of the custom of the sea is everyone's name or whatever way to do it. Everyone has to pull a straw, whatever way to do it."
Yeah,
whoever wins, loses, basically, and becomes the prize. And then this captain said, "Now, hang on a minute, lads, just before we start, we're going to change the rules. The prize will be confined to the four Yonfellas."
Yeah, well, you see, what often happened was the lottery was often rigged, and then there was often a decision made by the captain and the crew members that more what they would describe as expendable members of the crew should be alone eligible to take part in this lottery. So, for example, slaves would frequently be would be sacrificed. Young boys, such as the four lads on board the Francis Bay, And incredibly, even sometimes if any passengers were on board and were had survived, mm-hmm. they would also be eligible. Now, there were no passengers, of course, on this, so and there were no slaves, clearly.
Well, so Captain, it was a question well, Captain Thomas Gorman wouldn't have been eligible because he had such a hard neck. He probably wouldn't have been edible, God forgive me. He had a heart of stone, obviously. But anyway, this happened. Only the four boys were nominated to be eligible to surprise, as the prize.
Correct. And so what happened then was Patrick O'Brien, or Power O'Brien, as he was known, a young lad from the Thomangate in Limerick City, he had already proven his mettle on the voyage before the crisis. He had actually been a somewhat more independent minded than the other three boys. So there was a suggestion that he should just be killed straight away without any lottery. But the captain and some of the others then said, no, they had to go through the procedure that was mandated for such situations. And it was decided then, O'Brien himself then, of course, protested and said that it was going to be rigged. So it was decided then that to prevent this from happening, O'Brien should actually draw the lots. And what happened was another sailor prepared four sticks of varying lengths. And O'Brien then, the little boy, well, he was 15, he was blindfolded and got down on his knees. And the sailor then would pull one of the sticks out one by one. And O'Brien was required to call out the name of whichever of one of the four boys. So the first stick was called out, and the first stick was drawn by the sailor, and the blindfolded O'Brien shouted out, it's going to be little Johnny Sheehan. And that was left aside then. And then the next one was drawn out and some other name was called out. And then the third stick was drawn out and O'Brien said, this is my own. Now, with a sort of unseemly haste then, the captain and the others announced that this was in fact the short straw, the short stick, and therefore O'Brien was to die. Not surprisingly, of course, O'Brien felt that it was rigged against him. But clearly none of the others, including the other three boys, had any interest in suggesting that it was rigged, because they clearly didn't want to die
of course,
either.
They were relieved, yeah.
They were very relieved. Then the captain then orbited.
Yeah, but can we imagine, Matthew?
Yes.
No, we can't. Can we imagine those four children sitting there knowing in the pulling and the drawing of the stick that they were signing their own death warrant?
Well, actually, Jack London, the famous American writer, he wrote a short story on this.
Oh, did he? Okay. Okay, so we're now Patrick O'Brien. He now knows he's going to die.
He now knows he's going to die. And this is where Jack London, of course, describes how they were in tears and that there was that they were absolutely distraught and so on. But
So the reason I want to take this break, Matthew, is I want to say to parents or guardians, or listen, we're now going to talk about the fate of Patrick O'Brien, and it's not a happy ending. So you
it's
might want to
ending,
sing
no.
a lullaby or something to your children before we get to it, which is after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. And a reminder, we're talking about the Francis Spaight, 1835. A ship that was wrecked in a storm off the coast of Ireland, had previously plied between Limerick and Quebec. 18 people on board. We're now down to 15. They're now starving and drifting at sea. And there was apparently a custom, seafarer's custom, that they would draw lots to see who would feed the rest of them, basically, with their own body. Okay, we're now young Patrick, Pa O'Brien, Thomangate, Limerick. He's lost. He is the prize for the remaining 14. What did they do to him, Matthew?
Well,
I'm afraid to ask.
The captain ordered the cook on board the ship to bleed O'Brien's death. And the logic behind this was that if the cook was mandated to prepare meals for the crew, well, this was going to be another meal. So therefore, it was his job to kill O'Brien and then serve him up to the rest of the crew. And the cook quite predictably refused to do so. But then the captain ordered him to do so. And the other sailors on board then, they ganged up on the cook and said that if he didn't kill O'Brien, that they would kill the cook and cook him instead. So not surprisingly, the cook then changed his mind and decided he was going to do it. At this stage, poor O'Brien was fairly resigned to his fate, possibly because he was suffering from shock and he is already in a bad state from, you know, being exposed to the elements for the last few days, you know. And so he took off his jacket and he showed his arm to the cook. The cook then went at his arm with a knife, tried to cut a vein and bleed the boy to death, but there was no blood appeared. Then he made another attempt. Then the boy said that the boy, or O'Brien himself, then said, look, if the cook can't do it, I'll do it myself. He tried to bleed himself. Nothing happened. He said that a doctor in Limerick had once bled him, but he had done it successfully after an initial failure because the boy was too weak to give blood. So O'Brien then said, possibly playing for time, that if he could be given time to rest for a while, go to sleep for a bit, his body might be restored to the point where he could be able to give blood. But at this stage, generally, the captain said no, and he then ordered the cook to cut O'Brien's throat.
Oh.
And at this stage, anyway, a number of the crew seized O'Brien, held him down, threw his head back. They then got a large...
Okay.
Yeah. and they cut his throat anyway.
Okay, thanks. I haven't even a break to take, so we can run to the loo.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they were saved, were they?
Well, what happened then was they ate O'Brien, of course, the little boy.
Yeah.
And then the following day, then the cook himself went insane, and he was actually killed and eaten as well.
So many of them were rushing ahead. How many of them survived and landed back in Limerick, the murdering?
11 got to Limerick.
Yes, and many of them were sent to prison for murder.
Three were eaten, by the way, I should say. Another of the cabin boys was killed as well and eaten. So another man then, he was going to be eaten, but he died unexpectedly. So what happened then was after 20 days at sea, an American ship called the Agenora rescued them, brought them to Falmouth in Cornwall.
Yes.
And then, of course, the whole story began to circulate then about what had happened. And eventually they came back to Limerick then in early January. Now, the thing was, there was no proceedings taken against them because it was the custom to do this. And indeed, Captain Gorman had written a letter to Francis Bate, the owner of the ship, giving him an account of what had happened. And this initially was not published in the newspapers.
Okay.
To spare the delicacy of the public was how it was described.
Yeah, but because I'm running out of time. Did anyone write to Pa O'Brien's parents? He was only 15.
Yeah, his mother became hysterical, not surprisingly, and she berated the captain for bringing about her son's death. But she ended up being the only person against whom legal proceedings were taken.
Why?
Because Captain Gorman took her to court in the Limerick Magistrate Court for slandering him because she had gone about threatening him, according to the captain, because he had killed her son. She was going to kill Captain Gorman's family.
And the poor woman was charged. She was charged.
She was charged. Now, she was bound over to keep the peace, so she wasn't actually imprisoned or anything.
Yeah.
But the captain then also took proceedings against the first mate for insubordination. And this unfortunate man was actually found guilty, fined £3 and sentenced to imprisonment. So in other words, the captain and most of the scoundrels involved escaped scot-free. And so, of course, did Francis Bate.
The first mate wasn't it. He didn't become the first mate, did he? No, he didn't. He got away with it.
No, he was.
Is there any memorial to young Pa?
Not a physical memorial, but he was commemorated. This story, by the way, only came to light about 30 years ago when the late great Jim Kemmy wrote an article about it in the old Limerick Journal. This is a local historical journal, a very fine journal, that Jim Kemmy and another historian called Kevin Hannan had founded. And Jim Kemmy, of course, contributed articles to it frequently. So this article restored this story to the public domain. And then in 2014, the well-known Limerick playwright and actor Mike Finn wrote a play about this called The Unlucky Cabin Boy. It was actually a musical play, and it was performed in Limerick in 2014 in the Lime Tree Theatre as part of the Limerick City of Culture.
Okay.
So it was Jim
and
Kemmy.
Where can people read the story? I know there's the Limerick Museum. Is it memorialised there?
No, not at the moment, no.
Okay.
No.
Well, it's an incredible... by the way, I'll just say to people, if you Google the Francis Bate, you'll get the full story. Thanks, Dr. Matthew Potter. Thanks, curator of the Limerick Museum. Thank you so much for telling that incredible story. But Google it there on this Friday afternoon and you'll get the full story. We held back on some... Well, not many details in the end. We were hoping to hold back on more. But anyway, that's Matthew told the story so brilliantly. By the way, I should also say that a friend of mine, Tim McStay, his name actually, he's a musician. He's just written a music piece about the Uzel. And the Uzel is a ship, again, in Dublin, and that disappeared, and it became, in one sense, they set up a committee, which eventually became the Dublin Chamber of Commerce. But it was a very famous story around the centre of Dublin, and Tim McStay, the musician, just Google Tim McStay, he's written about it, and you get more information. Finally, another nomination, Marion Neary. Marion, good afternoon. Good afternoon to you. Who do you wish to nominate for the Oras? Marion.
Mancon McGann. Mancon McGann. I think he embodies everything about it, what it means to be Irish today. Our values, where we've come from, who we are, where we want to go. And you know how Michael D. Higgins, it's about trust.
Yes.
We know that every time he opens his mouth, he's going to say the right thing. And it's about right thinking. And I think Mancon McGann is all about right thinking. He first came on my radar, years ago on T.G. Cahir, talking about our land. He loves the land. He loves our language. And he's so much about our language, restoring it. And the environment. Like, that's a big thing nowadays for us, the environment. And he walks the talk.
I think he
bridges the gap between that kind of elder statesman, political hack, young generation.
And
he also fills
the other element, and that is that he's over, I think, have to be over 35, isn't it? Mancon McGann. Okay, well done, Marion Neary. Owen McLaughlin produced, and Anna Geary is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. For fabulous ideas and great savings, the winter sale is not to be missed. Now on, in-store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.